Chapter 5. The Arrival. Then, July. After a brief introduction to Karma and Michelle, we were shown around the ranch and then to our individual cabins. They were spread out in a horseshoe across the property like small brown beads. Inside mine was a bed made of birch logs, a small matching dresser, and a sink. No bathroom. No shower. Those were in another building and communal. Showering together wasn't how I wanted to build a community, but it was only for a few days. I'd been up since 4 to get my flight, and I was tired. The first scheduled activity was the greeting, whatever that meant, which was still a couple of hours away, so I spent a few minutes putting my stuff away in the dresser, then lay down on the block-patterned comforter on the narrow single bed and fell promptly to sleep. I wasn't a napper, but that afternoon I slept hard for 2 hours despite the bright sunlight streaming in through the windows. I don't remember dreaming, only the insistent buzzing of my phone that snapped me awake. Dan? Aha! I knew it! What? I sat up slowly, feeling dizzy and disoriented. You have your phone.
I do.
You said you wouldn't.
Are you cross-examining me right now?
Dan chuckled. I wouldn't dare.
We have some free time before the greeting. I guess we'll lose our phones then?
What's the greeting?
No idea. Everything has been pretty vague up to now.
You should have brought a burner phone with you.
Like a drug dealer?
So you can stay in touch, he said lightly.
I ran my hand through my hair. It was a mess and I smelled like the plane. Dan, you'll never guess who's here.
Oprah?
No, dummy. Athena Williams. He took a beat to process.
The Athena Williams?
Yes. And another woman, Connie Chu, that I did a deal for years ago. You know, the one who started Feliday, that security company?
Wow.
I worked out the kink in my neck and stretched my arms over my head. Admit it, you were kind of hoping for a juicy story.
It's early days.
True. I got up and walked to the window. The view was striking. More rolling grass, a large pasture, horses, and purple and yellow wildflowers. I set the phone down on the dresser and put it on speaker. How's Aunt Penny?
Sleeping.
She'd never left the hospital. She had good days and bad days, but she spent a lot of time sleeping, and we knew it wouldn't be long until she was gone. I'd almost canceled the trip because of it, but Dan encouraged me to say my goodbyes while she still knew who I was. It had been an emotional hour in her private room a few days earlier, and the effect still lingered like a bad hangover. Are you at the hospital?
Yeah. My mom's here too, and my sister.
I breathed in and out slowly. Dan's sister, Catherine, was a pain in the ass who was still mad we were living in Aunt Penny's place, even though she lived in Cincinnati. Dan's mother, Louise, favored her, though she'd always said she didn't want to take sides between her children. But when one child is a jerk and the other is the nicest person you've ever met, well, you are taking sides if you let the jerk get away with whatever they want under the guise of family unity. Sorry I'm missing it. I said.
Sure.
Well, I'm sorry I'm not there for you.
It's fine. She's had a good life.
I could hear the catch in his throat. She has. And Dan,
if we don't get to keep the apartment, it'll be fine.
Tears sprang to my eyes. It was the first time either of us had said it out loud. It was a stupid thing to get emotional about, real estate, but we'd been there for almost 10 years, the whole time we'd lived together. We'd gotten married there. We'd made every large decision that we'd made together there. Careers, whether to have kids, whether to stay together when we'd had a rough patch 5 years ago. I knew our marriage could continue outside its 4 walls, but I wasn't ready to face that possibility. You promise? I asked.
Yes. Now open your suitcase and check the inside pocket.
Why?
I left you a surprise.
Hold on. My suitcase was on a small stand in the corner. I opened it and felt around until I found the inside pocket where I usually kept my travel toothbrush. Instead, there was something small and rectangular. I unzipped the pocket and pulled it out.
You got me a burner phone?
I did. What am I supposed to do with this?
Hide it.
In case of...
In case of emergency.
You're nuts. An announcement sounded behind him. Someone was needed urgently in room 627, not Aunt Penny's room.
Maybe,
he said.
But I love you, and I don't like the thought of not being able to reach you for 5 days. Not in a creepy way, I promise.
I know. I clutched the phone in my hand, feeling sad and loved. Thank you. I didn't get a good look at Karma and Michelle when I'd arrived. They'd said hello, then spun off into the dust that was still swirling every time a gust of wind blew. Gary had been the one to give us our tour. At the end of it, he pointed to a large log structure at the center of the compound and told us to show up there at sunset after we'd had dinner. When I got off the phone with Dan, I read the printed schedule on the dresser and was relieved to see it was time to eat. I changed quickly into my new yoga wear, taking a fleece with me since I suspected it would cool off as soon as the sun went down. The communal dining room was in a large log building in the middle of the string of cabins. On one side were the showers, fitness room, and spa. The other was the dining room and a library lounge area. Inside, it had a similar vibe to the cabin I was staying in. Minimalist rustic, with walls and furniture made of bleached logs, and not much in the way of decoration other than an occasional Navajo-printed rug and one striking needlepoint of a lioness in full roar. This is what my law firm is paying $5,000 for? Though no one had promised luxury accommodations. Luxury thinking was the point, whatever that meant. The dining hall had two long tables set parallel to each other. A large wall of windows framed the mountains. The astounding view almost justified the price. There was a generous buffet set up on a table underneath the windows, two large salads, cold poached salmon, grilled vegetables, fluffy dinner rolls. It reminded me of the spreads we had at law firm events, expensive but bland. I thought briefly of the work I'd left behind. I shoved it aside and filled my plate, then turned to find a seat. Connie and Athena were at one of the tables, deep in conversation. The two women I didn't know were at the other. I wanted to sit with Connie and Athena. I'm an extrovert, though I have a cap on how many new people I can meet in a day. But the brunette from the van motioned for me to join them, and this was about building community. So I did.
Hi, I'm Samantha Cole, she said when I took a seat across from her.
She had half the amount of food on her plate that I had, and I felt embarrassed by my gluttony. Samantha held out her hand and gave me a firm shake, eye contact, an open expression.
Nicole Mueller, I said.
What do you do?
The other woman asked. She had pale skin and a halo of orange hair around her head that reminded me of Orphan Annie. She also wore a sullen expression, but maybe she was just tired from the travel. There were dark circles under her baby blue eyes, and I guessed her to be in her late 30s or early 40s.
I'm a lawyer.
The redhead sat back in her seat in a challenge.
A lawyer, huh?
Yep, hit me with your best lawyer joke. I can take it.
Samantha laughed. It was a pleasant sound, almost a giggle, which was at odds with her forthright manner.
I like lawyers.
Not many do. I play one on TV.
For the umpteenth time that day, I felt like a dummy. That's why she was familiar. Not because I'd seen her around Manhattan, but because she was on that show, District Attorney. Half my firm was obsessed with. I'd never watched it because I didn't need to watch what I did all day on TV. When I had the time, I wanted an escape into things like zombies and post-apocalyptic futures where people disappeared and then reappeared with special powers. I knew those things didn't happen. But trials did.
Watching fake trial prep made me anxious.
Your show is very popular, I said. Congratulations.
You don't watch it, though, right? Orphan Annie said.
I didn't catch your name.
And you didn't answer the question.
My shoulders crept up. You're right, I don't watch. Sorry.
It's fine. You can't take things like that personally.
I smiled at her.
I agree.
Her name is Heather Davis, Samantha said.
Nice to meet you, Heather.
Heather picked at the food on her plate. She'd taken a generous portion like me, but had barely eaten any of it.
Sure.
She's not very friendly, Samantha offered.
Do you two know one another?
We were sitting next to each other on the plane. I watched Heather hunt a stray piece of lettuce around her plate. She didn't seem to mind us talking about her like she wasn't there, but something about her whole vibe was off. Everyone else was excited to be there. Heather seemed pissed, like she was there against her will.
What do you do, Heather?
She raised her head with a sigh.
I'm in corporate finance. I specialize in hostile takeovers.
Ah, I know who you are.
Have we met?
New York is a small town.
If someone had told me that 15 years ago, I would have said they were nuts. How could a city with 8 million people be a small town? But I knew now what she meant. When it got down to it, there were circles within circles that made it seem as if everyone knew one another. I'm always running into people I know at restaurants or browsing in a store on a Saturday.
What firm are you at? I asked.
Young and Fine.
That explained it. They were clients. Young and Fine purchased companies through aggressive tactics that often ended up in litigation. That's where we came in. It wasn't my specialty, but everyone in the firm had to work on some of those cases.
How did you end up here? I asked.
Heather smiled for the first time.
That's a long story.
Feels like we have time.
Someone clapped their hands together sharply.
Okay, ladies, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Gary was standing at the head of the room, holding what looked like a pillowcase. He'd added a black, puffy vest to his cowboy uniform, and his boots were dusty.
Oh, God, Heather said.
What?
You'll see.
Had Heather been at the ranch before? I'd assumed she was a newbie like me, but clearly that was wrong. Come to think of it, Connie had never answered my question about that either. Maybe I was the only new recruit.
Cell phones, please,
Gary said.
Oh, Samantha said. I guess they were serious about that?
As a heart attack, Heather said. I took my phone out and checked it. There was a rush of email messages, which I scrolled through quickly. Nothing urgent.
Ladies, let's go.
Everyone at my table was doing the same thing as me, sending last-minute messages. Connie and Athena had their phones in their hands, but weren't looking at them. I felt ashamed. Cell phones were like yawns, contagious, but still. I'd handled everything at work, and Dan had thought ahead and given me an escape route if I needed it. I could give up my phone. I stood and walked toward Gary, taking inventory as I went. The calm certainty of Athena and Connie. The way Heather clutched her phone to her breast. Gary's air of authority. I didn't know what it was adding up to, but collecting information I might need later reassured me. Up close, Gary had a dark shadow across his chin where his beard was coming back and eyes that were almost black. He was strong, fit, and powerful. Not a man to be trifled with. He nodded at me and held open the bag. I placed my phone inside, trying not to feel like I was giving up a limb. It's only 4 days, I thought. Not enough time for anything significant to happen.
Chapter 6. The Greeting. Then, July. Night stole into the compound like a thief.
One minute I was watching the most amazing sunset I've ever seen, and the next it was so dark it was hard to see my hand in front of my face. It was a moonless night, and the stars were thick in the sky, the Milky Way a shimmering wave. "Is that Venus?" I asked, pointing to the brightest star.
"Fuck if I know," Heather said.
"This way," Athena said briskly. She pointed toward an even darker part of the compound. We followed along single file, Connie, Samantha, Heather, me, and Athena bringing up the rear. The path was a narrow rut in the dirt. When we turned a corner, there was a large open structure looming against the inky sky and a roaring fire beneath it, the sparks reaching up into the night, the wood crackling. The fire was made from a sweet-smelling wood, an apple tree maybe, with a hint of something else. It was calming, and I let out a slow breath, like I'd learned in the yoga classes I no longer went to, deep and from the solar plexus.
"Take a seat," a woman's voice said. It was low and soothing, like chimes tinkling. It was hard to see who was speaking in the dark.
There were two figures standing side by side across the fire from us, their faces in shadow. They were both wearing long, flowing garments that made them appear shapeless. We followed her instructions and sat a few feet apart from one another on the two low logs that were set up around the fire. I slipped my fleece on, glad I'd thought to bring it.
"Welcome," the woman said once we were all seated. "I'm Michelle Song."
She stepped forward. The fire lit up her gray blonde hair, which she wore in a long side braid over her shoulder. While I hadn't recognized her when I met her briefly that afternoon, once I heard her last name, I knew who she was.
"Welcome to Panthera Ranch, and welcome to Panthera Leo. We could not be happier that you've accepted our invitation to join our little community."
Michelle shared a bemused look with the woman standing next to her, Karma. Connie and Athena joined her in a laugh.
"We may be little in numbers, but we're outsized in influence. That's the goal, anyway."
Her words flowed like music, which made perfect sense. Michelle Song was the lead singer of the Songbirds, one of those 80s groups that played ubiquitously throughout my childhood. She was over 60 now, but she still had the Kelly Green eyes that gazed out from her 3 multi-platinum albums. She dropped out of the music business in the early 2000s after a brief comeback album.
"And I roam through the grass, and I roam through your heart, and I roam through my life, wishing, wishing, wishing that I had another song to sing."
That was the chorus of her last earworm, which my mother had played on repeat while she danced around the house. She would be so excited if she knew that I was this close to Michelle's song. But she'd died 10 years ago, so all I could feel was her loss.
"Influence," Michelle said. "Do you know how important that is in the world?
You might think you do, but it's more than you know. That client you didn't get, Nicole? That part that went to someone else, Samantha? That deal that fell apart, Heather? That's not because of a lack of talent or motivation or hard work. Maybe for others, but not for you. We've vetted you. We know." Michelle looked at each of us directly. When I met her eyes across the fire, it felt as if she were looking directly into my heart, my ambition, as if she knew all the plans I had for myself were slipping away.
"You lost those things because of influence, or its lack. Influence is everything. It's the boys' club, the inner circles you don't even know are there. If you're lucky, you might break in. More often than not, you don't, and sometimes it's without even knowing it. We've felt that in our own lives. You think I got credit for writing all our songs?
The record company insisted I give equal credit to my ex-husband because he was the tortured artist type. He was believable as the auteur of our hits. Me? I was the candy floss that made it palatable. I was a mother. Mothers don't write hit songs. That's not cool, man. I butted up against that for 10 years, and then I'd had enough. I was tired of it all. I'll bet you're tired of it, too. I was. My God, I was so tired. Beneath all the frustration and anger at what the points committee had done to me was exhaustion. I'd worked myself to the bone for years, and it didn't seem to be enough. Why was that? It wasn't just the boys' club, but it wasn't not the boys' club either. I was tired and frustrated, and all I could think to do was drop out and leave it all behind. Being a wife and mother and a superstar was weighing me down so much I felt strangled. And then I met Karma, Michelle said, smiling at the woman who stood slightly behind her. She was in her mid-50s and tall. Her shoulder-length hair was dark, thick, and wavy, held back from her face with a band made of the same pattern as the rugs in the lodge. Her skin was burnished, and her eyes looked black in the night. She was wearing something similar to Michelle, a long, flowing tunic made out of natural fibers in a deep russet color. As fate would have it, Karma said with a smile. As fate would have it, everyone but Samantha and me said as one, while I shivered in my fleece. Maybe you read the stories, Michelle said, how I dropped out of my record deal and went to Tanzania to find myself. Those articles always had a certain tone about them, like I couldn't take it, like I was drying out from too many parties and too many men. Nothing could be further from the truth. Her melodic voice turned steely. The media has such a failure of the imagination where women are concerned. She spread her arms out wide. I wasn't there to find myself. I was there to return to myself, to get back what the media and the fans and my ex had taken from me. She thumped her chest. My courage, my creativity, my ambition. And when I'd peeled away the layers that I'd cloaked myself in, I knew a few truths. You don't have to be in the spotlight to get what you want. You don't have to be loud to wield power. You can achieve everything you want if you know one simple thing. We are stronger together. Together we are one, Connie and Athena said in response, sending a chill through me. Silence fell. I watched the crack and pop of the fire and followed a shower of sparks up to where they met the horizon. I shivered again, goosebumps climbing up my arms. Michelle's words resonated. I'd felt alone in my career for reasons I couldn't quite explain, and even before then, in college, in law school. The idea that there might have been others who'd have my back no matter what filled me with a sense of hope. What this means in practice is simple, Karma said after a moment, her voice deep, almost masculine. We work together to advance our interests. We champion one another. We're like Emily's List, with teeth. Laughter rippled around the circle like dominoes falling. Speaking of teeth, Karma said, most of you know this, but for the uninitiated, you may have noticed our symbol around. She stepped closer to the fire and pointed to the pin on her left shoulder that was holding her wrap in place. It had the same lioness on it that I'd seen Athena and Connie wearing. Panthera Leo. That's our name and our emblem. The female lion. Because she is the one that gets things done in the pride. Without women, the men wouldn't eat. They wouldn't have the lion's share to take. That's true for humankind, too, but often unacknowledged, even today. The woman behind the man,
sure. But she's supposed to be nice and polite. She's not supposed to be primal. Gentle, not vicious. Only men are allowed those attributes. Karma held out her hands to the fire. But don't worry, you don't have to be outwardly fierce. It's a metaphor for what we stand for. Being in charge and getting what we want. We don't need to take the credit. Let the men take that if they want to, when they need to. When it counts, your contribution will be recognized.
So, what does this mean in practice? Michelle said, stepping up to Karma. The two of them formed a pendulum, swinging back and forth in harmony.
It means that if you need anything, you come to this group. To your pride. You are a family, one without a formal leader. Women don't need to fight for their dominance. They join together willingly to achieve the best result for all. When one of us asks for help, we say yes without hesitation or excuses. We don't put up barriers or question choices. We let our fellow Leo know that we are there for her, and we will do whatever it takes to resolve her issue. A log tumbled from the pile and released another cascade of sparks. Karma raised her arms up in a welcoming motion.
Enough talk for now. We'll discuss more of this tomorrow, after you've had a chance to sleep and process. We know you're all tired from your journey.
A few last words to explain the greeting. Michelle dived quickly down to the ground to pick something up. A round wooden bowl that she held in her hands like an offering. Leos are our symbol and our guide. Their method of greeting is personal and comforting. A simple rubbing of their heads, like this. She turned with the bowl in her hands to Karma, who leaned her forehead in until it was touching Michelle's. They moved their heads back and forth slowly, reminding me of an Inuit kiss, or kunik.
Please rise.
Karma stepped back from Michelle and motioned for us to stand. We did, one by one.
Turn toward each other.
I faced Heather. She rolled her eyes at me quickly, and I gave her a small smile.
Lean in.
We did as instructed. Heather smelled like sandalwood and possibly weed. Our foreheads touched, and I swept mine back and forth. It was a strangely intimate gesture, much more so than the standard cheek kiss that I'd never liked.
Please give the greeting to everyone, then come and take a sip from the bowl, Michelle instructed.
We did as she asked, leaning into one another, learning each other's scents, the feel of their hair as it brushed against our cheeks. In the back of my mind, Dan was laughing at me, but I banished him. So the ritual was a bit hokey and not my thing. Who cared? I'd spent my whole life trying to conform to the male ideal of how a woman in business should be, and where had it gotten me? Less points, that's where. Maybe a bit of hokey was what I was missing. When we were done, we lined up in front of Michelle, who was cradling the wooden bowl in her hands. Don't be worried, this is a simple, natural sleeping draft that we learned to make in Tanzania many years ago when Karma was researching products. It will help ease your mind into sleep quickly so you can get the most out of your time here. I shifted nervously from foot to foot. I'd turned down Athena's Xanax because drugs weren't my thing. But what could it hurt? It was going to be hard for me to sleep after that nap, and I was exhausted. I needed a break from my brain. When it was my turn with the bowl, I took a large, bitter gulp. That's what Michelle and Karma had said Panthera was about, right? Accepting help without question? Or was it the other way around? I was suddenly too tired to tell.
Chapter 7. The Workout. Then, July. I slept the sleep of the innocent, but was woken by the sun at the ungodly hour of 6 a.m. The first thing on the schedule wasn't until that afternoon, a hike ominously called the Hunt. I hope this was a metaphor.
Although I ate meat, I didn't want to kill it. Regardless, I needed to find something to do with myself until then. I was like a child who didn't know how to entertain herself without screens. I grabbed some freshly squeezed orange juice in the dining room and headed to the gym. If I was going to get 2 extra hours in the day, I should work on my fitness. And by work, I meant start doing something about it again. 40 was just around the corner, and my recent wardrobe discovery meant I wasn't going to be able to rely on my metabolism to keep from having to buy an entire new set of clothes if I didn't change some things soon. I expected to be alone in the gym, but Heather was already there, running red-faced on a treadmill at a speed I knew I'd never attain. I waved to her in the mirror and got on the other treadmill. A fast walk seemed like the right way to start. After 5 minutes, I was panting and cursing myself. How had I let things get this bad? I resolved to exercise for 30 minutes every day, even if it meant having to forego a bit of sleep, and to cut out that second glass of wine that had snuck into my daily dinner routine. Surely that should be enough. "What do you think of the place?" Heather said, thumping her arms onto the side of my treadmill. I reduced my speed because I knew I couldn't walk that fast and talk at the same time. "It's beautiful." Heather wiped her face with a towel. Up close, you could see that her complexion was freckles with milky white skin underneath. She had her hair in 2 braids and looked more like Anne of Green Gables than Orphan Annie. "I meant, what did you think of Michelle and Karma? Last night's spiel, etc." I glanced over my shoulder, though I wasn't sure what I was worried about. "I like the underlying message." "You're cautious. I get it. You're a lawyer." I slowed my treadmill down even further. "So far, it's not what I expected." "What did you think it was going to be?" "Not sure. Meetings, PowerPoint presentations on how to build up our referral networks." "It's more like an intense corporate team-building retreat." I checked the treadmill's screen. I hadn't even walked a mile, and my legs felt like they were dying. I wanted to reach for the speed button again, but I didn't want to show weakness in front of Heather. Those corporate raiders were all the same, ultra-aggressive without much thought for the consequences. Litigators lived in other people's consequences. It was our job to fix their mistakes. "Have you been here before?" I asked. "I have, but I didn't end up joining Panthera the first time." "Why not?" "I had to leave for a work emergency. No big deal." "You thought it was worth it, to give it another try?" She passed her towel over her face. "I guess I did." "Do you know Karma's story? Michelle's, I know. My mother was obsessed with her when I was growing up. But there wasn't that much information about Karma on the website." "She's good Karma."
"The wellness brand?"
"Yep. But that's just where she started. She's got an umbrella of companies now in the personal care and holistic pharmaceutical industry. Some she started herself and some she's acquired. Last year, she made the list of female billionaires." I scrolled through the mental images I had of the CEO of Good Karma, a frequent Instagram presence who came off as a slicker, more corporate version of Gwyneth Paltrow. Yet here she was distinctly granola. Was either of them real? How did she and Michelle meet?
"In Tanzania. Karma sources a lot of her ingredients there. You know, all those tree bark sap facials and whatever."
My treadmill beeped. I'd finally walked a mile. I was either going to have to start running or do 45 minutes every day in order to get any decent mileage. "Why did they start Panthera?"
"To fight the patriarchy," Heather smirked. "But that didn't stop Vic Sullivan from trying to take over Good Karma 5 years ago.
I'd heard of Sullivan. He was an inventive genius who'd started numerous companies that all seemed to turn immediately to gold. But he'd had some legal trouble in the last couple of years and had been ousted from his first company, Sullivant, a massive biotech firm that was on the cutting edge of using tech to deliver medication.
"Your firm worked on the deal?"
"Yep.
Putting men in charge of women's companies is one of our specialties. Diversity this and diversity that and sensitivity training and you know what's changed? Exactly nothing, that's what. If you have a vagina, then you're handicapped. God forbid if you have a kid or show an emotion at work.
I felt my blood starting to boil. Emotional women, right? That is such bullshit.
So much bullshit. It's men that do most of the violence. It's their emotions we need protecting from.
Sing it, sister. Heather looped her towel around her neck. Her face was as red as it had been at the beginning of our conversation. I wondered how long it stayed like that.
Anyway, Karma fought off the takeover, and I think that prompted them to get more aggressive with recruiting people into Panthera. She wanted to consolidate a wall of female power to stave off any other men who thought they knew better. And it's worked, as far as I can tell. Those assholes all respect her now.
That's cool.
Yep.
Does your office know you're here?
Hell to the no. They'd have kittens.
Where do they think you are?
Heather raised the corner of her mouth. Rehab. Can you believe that shit? It's the only way to take a real vacation these days. And since the men do it too, they can't say anything about it.
That's fucked up.
It's life. Do what you need to do to get by. Your firm know that you're here?
Not exactly.
Where do they think you are?
I checked the screen again. I seemed to be entering a hill section and the treadmill was creeping slowly upwards as my calves protested.
Well, that's what I thought. Anyway, I should take a shower. See you later.
She left, and I thought over what she'd said. I hadn't lied about where I was going, but I hadn't told the full truth either. A networking conference, I'd said, and that was the reason I was here. But I also knew that if I'd told Thomas what I was doing in detail and asked for permission, he wouldn't have given it. So I didn't ask. It's always easier to apologize after. So long as your apology is accepted.
Chapter 8. The Hunt and the Dunk. Then, July. At lunch, we gathered around one of the communal tables and got to know one another, establishing career paths and people we knew in common. Things we did not talk about. Fashion, shoes, or beauty treatments. Whether we looked good or fat. Where to find a man. When we were done, we changed into hiking clothes and assembled by the ashes of last night's fire. I developed a small, lingering headache, and I had my doubts about the innocence of the concoction I'd imbibed. Then again, it was equally likely to be device withdrawal. Either way, I'd had a good, if short, sleep and was about to exercise for the second time that day. This group was already giving me benefits. We waited for Karma and Michelle in the hot sun. It got cool at night, but it was full summer, the temperature during the day in the mid-80s, though the air was dry, so different from the mugginess of home. The sky felt a million miles high, clear and blue. And endless. Gary arrived and handed each of us a small pack that contained a rain jacket, water bottle, compass, granola, first aid kit, and a map, then left us. The ranch appeared to operate on minimal or very discreet staff, as I hadn't seen anyone other than Gary and a few people working in the kitchen. I wondered what the place was used for generally, or if it was exclusively for the group. Once we'd settled our packs on our shoulders, Karma and Michelle appeared. Both of them had traded their flowing robes for more practical hiking shirts and three-quarter leggings with sturdy hiking shoes. They passed quickly through us, giving us the greeting from the night before. "We'll be hiking out there," Karma said, pointing to the tall green grasses that were lilting in the breeze beyond the dusty courtyard. She was wearing a pack that had a rifle attached to its side. "But first, a bit of information. Who can tell me how a lion hunts?"
"It stalks its prey," Samantha said. She was wearing black hiking shorts that ended at her knees and a matching ball cap with her long hair ponytailing out the back.
Her legs and arms were toned in a way I'd never achieve, even if I worked out daily for hours. I was glad I was in a profession where that kind of dedication to my body wasn't necessary.
"That's right," Michelle said, quietly, in tall grasses. "It waits for the right moment before it pounces. It's a stalker. Not for its own pleasure, but to survive. It requires enormous patience and cooperation, two traits that are important to develop in yourselves. If you have them, you'll be rewarded."
"So that's what we're going to do today," Karma added. "Work on our ability to move through things together to obtain a reward."
"Is that what the rifle is for?" I asked.
"It's for protection. This isn't New York City."
Athena smiled. "Lots of people have guns in New York City."
"What are we stalking then?" Heather asked.
"Life."
Karma turned on her heel and started walking through the courtyard. We followed her one by one, kicking up dust until we entered the tall grass, which was sharp and caught exposed flesh if you didn't approach it the right way. As we hiked, Karma and Michelle pointed out elements of our environment that we would have ignored. A patch of bent grass that meant an animal had rested there. The way the wind carried scents. How to stand in a formation that would allow the group to have a 360 view of the landscape and signal to one another about what surrounded us. It reminded me of Girl Scout training, the badges I'd earned a distant memory. We didn't see much wildlife beyond some birds and an errant jackrabbit, its white tail flashing through the grass, but I felt much more aware of my environment and my place in it. I appreciated the lesson in complete stillness, how to freeze in place and listen. Total concentration was a skill I already used in my job, and it felt good to flex that muscle.
"When you stop to listen," Michelle said, standing with her arms out wide, her fingertips fluttering over the tops of the long grass, "life is all around you. The more you know about it, the more you can shape it to your will. Pick your target, learn everything you can about it, and then go in for the kill." She turned in a circle, looking each one of us in the eye. "Understood?"
We nodded, and she smiled in response. Karma flicked her wrist, pointing across a rolling expanse, motioning us to follow her. Sweat ran down my back as the sun covered us, the ground deceptively challenging. We hiked silently for 30 minutes until we arrived at the cool shade of a stand of aspens. There was a river nearby, its bubbling an invitation. I put down my pack and I reached gratefully for my water bottle. "I was going to walk, run for 45 minutes every morning from now on if it killed me." We formed a natural circle around Karma and Michelle, who didn't look winded or hot. They probably ate perfect organic diets and never fought over the last helping of sesame noodles.
"How can you apply the lessons we learned over the last few hours to your life?" Michelle said.
"Know your enemy?" Samantha said.
"That's right. It is good to know as much as possible about anyone who's standing in your way. Information is a tool."
"Anything else?"
"Be aware of your surroundings," I said.
Michelle turned to me, her focus sharp.
"Another good suggestion, but unpack that a little."
"If you know your environment well, you can use it to your advantage, or at least not let it get in your way."
"Excellent. Anyone else? What about instincts?"
"We should trust them," Heather said.
"You should trust your pride," Karma said. "Instincts can lead us astray."
"How?"
"Take today," Karma said, pointing to the field. "If that had been a real hunt, if we were truly stalking a dangerous animal, your instincts might have been telling you to give up, to flee from the danger. But trusting in your pride would keep you in place and on task."
"Trust others," she was saying. "Let them help you."
It made sense to me.
It was probably why I'd acted uncharacteristically and accepted the invitation in the first place.
There is much to learn from Leo, Karma said, and from each other. In order to do that, we need to build trust, to strip away the barriers that divide us, both emotional and physical.
Karma pointed toward the creek.
That water is never more than 60 degrees, even in the hottest summer. Right now, it's even colder. That's why we'll be going in. We'll strip away our clothes and the fears we cover ourselves in. Only when we're naked before each other can we build absolute trust.
I stared at the creek. The water was rushing through the rocks, and if there are two things I hate, it's cold water and being naked in front of others. I'm one of those women who went into the curtained-off changing room in the gym. I never understood the women who had no compunction in removing their clothes in a room full of strangers and who lounged around with their towels around their waists as if they were men.
"Won't we get hypothermia?" Samantha asked.
I had to go into a river on a shoot once, and that totally happened.
We'll only be in for 30 seconds, enough time to fully immerse yourself and feel the experience. Then you'll walk here to the sunlight and let nature warm you.
That satisfied Samantha, but not the riot of complaints in my mind. I didn't even take cold showers during the worst days of summer. The last time I'd willingly gotten into freezing water was during a polar bear swim when I was 14. It did not go well.
What if we have a medical condition that prevents us from doing it? I asked.
Michelle gave me a bland expression.
Do you?
Well, not diagnosed, but I think I have a low threshold for hypothermia.
It's your choice. Just as it's your choice to join us or continue on your merry way. But I would ask, why did you come here?
To get what you mentioned in your email, the advantages that men have in the workplace.
That's honest, and did you think you wouldn't have to work to get those things?
No, but what does jumping into freezing water have to do with getting ahead in the workplace?
Yes. It's not linear, Nicole. I cannot promise you that if you do this, then you'll achieve the results that others have. But I can promise you that if you don't, you won't. It's up to you.
She held her hand out. My hand raised almost automatically to meet it. When our fingers touched, hers were cold, like she'd already been in the water.
We can do it together.
All right? I gazed into her eyes and felt the power of persuasion that she possessed, that certain light of accomplishment. She could see past this moment, and I wanted to.
Yes.
She smiled and released my hand. She started to undress. I wanted to turn around to do the same, but I had a feeling that wasn't the point. So I picked a spot just past her ear and slowly removed my own clothes, letting them fall at my feet.
Let's go, everyone. You too, Michelle said.
I willed myself not to look around, not to think about the fact that I hadn't shaved my legs in a week or gotten that bikini wax I was supposed to. This wasn't a date, and no one cared about my personal grooming. I shouldn't care either, though most of these women had better bodies than mine. Was it easier to be nude when you had better personal self-esteem? Then again, most women probably hate something about their bodies. I'd never heard a man talk about that. How did that happen?
Ready?
Michelle asked. Her shoulders were pale, with only a half moon of darker skin where her neck was normally exposed.
Ready,
I said with confidence I did not feel. She reached out again, and I took her cold hand. We walked down the bank in our bare feet, the rocks scraping at our tender flesh. The closer we got to the river, the more powerful it seemed. The water hurried loudly through large rocks and was about 3 feet deep. The air smelled cold.
There's a deeper pool over there, Michelle said in my ear. If we can get to those rocks, we can drop right in, then climb out.
I tried to see where she was pointing. On the far side of the river, about 50 feet away, there was a circle of rocks where the current seemed less violent. I'd have to take her word for it that it was deep enough to jump into without breaking a leg. She let go of my hand and stepped onto a large rock, then another. I followed her from rock to rock. I held my arms out from my body to keep from falling. I couldn't hear my heart beating over the roar, but I could feel it. When I checked my watch, my heart rate was at 140 beats a minute, higher than I'd gotten that morning on the treadmill. We reached a large flat rock near the circle that Michelle had pointed to. There was enough room for both of us to stand on it, but our sides were touching, my hot body lining up with her cool one. I couldn't believe I was about to do this. But I'd come this far, the water wouldn't kill me, even if it felt like it might, and the one thing I couldn't abide was failure. That's what had been driving me toward this, the sense that I was about to fail for the first time in my life. No, fuck that. I wasn't failing. I was jumping. "Ready?" Michelle said in my ear again. "Let's do it." 3, 2. She tugged my arm and pulled me in after her, not bothering to wait for one. The water felt like a slap. It stole my breath and clung to my bones. The pool was deep enough to sink all the way over my head, and it was black beneath the surface. Sound cut out, and I tried not to panic as the breath rushed from my body. My feet hit the bottom, and I instinctively kicked up until my head broke the surface. Michelle was treading water next to me. She grabbed my arm. 20 more seconds. I nodded as my teeth started to chatter, and I began to count in my head. Each second was agony, a test of my will not to panic and let the water pull me under. I'd never felt so cold. The polar bear swim was nothing compared to this. It didn't matter. All that mattered was the cold. The cold. The motherfucking cold. And out! Michelle released me, and I slipped beneath the surface. I kicked up, and two sturdy hands reached down and lifted me out, enveloping me in a metallic space blanket that felt like tissue paper. "Wrap that around you tight," Karma said, "and walk back to the sun." I did as she instructed and stepped past Samantha, who was next in line and was not looking happy about it. Heather was behind her, staring into the woods, doing her best not to see what was coming. Athena and Connie weren't there, but I guessed they'd already done this part. I walked with my teeth chattering back to the field, slipping on the rocks, the space blanket barely covering me. I had no heat to hold in, and it felt as if I'd never get warm again. I climbed up the bank to where I'd left my clothes. Athena and Connie were sitting there, sunning themselves like life was a picnic. "You made it," Athena said.
So,
you need help warming up?" Athena stood and walked to me. She took the blanket and tucked it around me quickly so I didn't have time to be embarrassed, then took my left arm between her hands and started rubbing vigorously. It hurt, but I could also feel a bit of warmth spreading through my hands. "Connie, help me out. Her lips are blue." Connie took my other arm, following Athena's example as they moved me into the sun. After a few minutes, my teeth stopped chattering. Just in time for Samantha to emerge from the woods looking like I must have, blue lips, white skin, space blanket like a cape. "Help her," I said, clenching my jaw to keep my teeth from clacking. They listened to me, and I lay down on my back in the grass, using my clothes as a pillow. I watched the cloudless sky, willing the sun to leach into my bones and warm them. In a few minutes, Samantha joined me, then Heather, her teeth still chattering rapidly. Then Michelle sat on the ground, dressed back in her clothes.
She seemed calm and much warmer than I did. How do you feel?
Cold, Heather said.
Anything else?
Like I survived something, I said.
You did. You survived something together. And even though you were afraid, even though you didn't want to do it, you did it without question. Well, without too many questions.
We laughed.
Look behind you.
We turned. Standing in the field about 100 yards away was a large mule deer. It had a thick rack of antlers that sprouted up about 1 foot above its head, not a full adult. It was staring at us, placidly chewing on some grass, not a care in the world, and certainly no fear of us.
Wow, that's cool, Heather said.
Is it dangerous? Samantha asked.
Not unless you charge it or threaten its young, Karma said, emerging from the woods.
She'd changed back into her clothes as well, though her hair was wet.
Had she jumped into that water just for fun?
Let's get dressed, everyone. We still have a ways to hike.
We obeyed her without protest. I climbed back into my clothes and twisted my hair up in an elastic. I wished I'd thought to bring a ball cap. The sun was still beating down and it was making my headache worse. I put my sunglasses on and took a sip of water, then put my pack back on.
Gather round, Karma said, and we formed a by now familiar circle around her.
We were talking earlier about how Leo hunts, how it stalks its prey. It likes the element of surprise. It waits for the weak animal to wander off from the herd, and that's when it pounces. Sticking together is important to ward against that sort of attack. Sticking together is what protects you. Don't get separated from the pride, because otherwise you might end up with your neck snapped.
I shivered even though I was warm.
Too gruesome for you? Michelle asked, sensing my unease.
It's fine.
No use in hiding from reality, Karma said, stepping out of the circle, her gaze on something in the distance. That's how lionesses kill. When they find their prey, they snap its neck and sink their teeth into its throat.
Then she pivoted and pulled the rifle out of the side of her pack in a fluid motion. She put her eye to the sight and pulled the trigger.
Boom!
I turned in time to see the bullet connect with the deer we'd seen earlier. It stared at us in stunned silence for a moment, then toppled to its knees and disappeared in the grass. And for the first time, I felt afraid. Now, October. Like the deer that Karma shot without warning, Jack was also taken down by a bullet. His head is tilted to the left, arms splayed out. There's a red stain on his chest. I look away from the violence, concentrating on other details to quell the horror. He's wearing jeans and a black cashmere sweater. His watch is pulling away from where it usually rests on his wrist, revealing a white tan line. His hands are bruised like he's been in a fight.
Fuck.
I pull out my phone and open the encrypted app I've been receiving text messages through.
There's a dead man here.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Stand by.
Stand by? Stand by? I'm standing over the body of a dead man my friend almost definitely killed in the middle of the night, and I'm supposed to wait on hold as if I'm trying to activate my cell phone?
I've been taking too many orders tonight. Too many orders in general. It's time I got some answers on my own. I move gingerly around the bed, making sure to give a wide berth to the body. It takes an act of will not to call 911, and it's only because I'm certain that he's dead that I don't. No ambulance can save him now. But I need to do something.
Think, think, think!
He was shot. That means there must be a gun. My eyes sweep the thick rug. No gun. I bend down and lift the skirting that's concealing the underside of the bed, using the flashlight on my phone to search the darkness. Dust bunnies, an errant elastic, but no gun. I stand and walk quickly but carefully over every inch of the room, but there's no gun in here. Could it have been in the bathroom and I missed it? Athena? I whispered loudly, though I'm not sure why I'm whispering at all. The walls between these apartments are thick. Thick enough, obviously, to muffle the shot that took out Jack in the fight that preceded it. I walk out of the room. Athena, I say more loudly this time. She pokes her head out of the bathroom. She looks almost normal now, her hair pulled back, some color returned to her face. What? Where is the gun? The gun? You know what I'm talking about. Athena only looks at me blankly, and I wonder if it's the shock or if she truly doesn't know what I'm asking. Jack, the man you shot in your bedroom. Athena's head snaps back sharply. Is he dead? Yes. Are you sure? I don't have time for this. Where's the gun you used to shoot him? Athena's eyes lose focus again, and I'm worried I'm going to have to slap her to knock her back into reality. Not that I'm above doing that, but there's been enough violence tonight. Where is it, Athena? I'm not kidding. I didn't mean... I know, I say, even though I don't know. You can tell me what happened later. Right now, I need to find it. She gets that blurred look again, then turns away from me and walks down the hall and then down the stairs. I follow in her wake, wondering if it's in the living room, if I should have searched it properly when I arrived, even though I didn't know what had happened then or what to look for. But Athena doesn't stop in the living room. She's walking toward the kitchen. When she gets there, she doesn't turn on the lights or hesitate. She walks to the wall of white cabinets and touches one of them. It slides open on a soundless mechanism. I come up next to her. It's the garbage chute. Down there, she says, pointing a delicate finger. It was trash. Then she throws back her head and laughs. Chapter 9, The Cleanup. Then, July. Well, that was gruesome, Samantha said that night at dinner. I mean, I've been covered in blood before, but it was fake. Ugh, I can barely eat, Heather added, pushing her plate of food away. I agreed with them that butchering the deer had been an ordeal, but I'd oddly had no problem eating. When we'd returned to the property, I was ravenous. After Karma had checked that she'd gotten a clean shot off and the deer was dead, she'd pulled a set of boning knives and saws out of her backpack, arranging them on the grass in an orderly fashion. Then she'd strung the deer up in a tree with Connie and Michelle's help and started giving instructions on how to disembowel it. Heather had tried to protest that she was a vegetarian, but a look from Karma silenced her. It had been a grueling 3 hours of work, hard and physical. When we were done, the smell of blood filled our nostrils in a way we wouldn't soon forget. I'd wondered how we were going to get the hundreds of pounds of flesh back to camp, dreading the thought of having to lug it ourselves, when Gary appeared on a 4x4 with a large cooler on the back. He said he'd take it from there, and we hiked silently away from him, exhausted. When we got back to the ranch, we headed without discussion for the communal showers. I had no issues stripping down in front of the other women this time. I put my clothes directly in the trash. There was blood spatter around my shirt cuffs that was unlikely to come out without major elbow grease, and I had no desire to try. I stepped into the warm spray and scrubbed every inch of my body until the water ran cold. Then I wrapped myself in a towel and walked back to my cabin. That night's menu was simple: Caesar salad and garlic bread and spaghetti. It was exactly what I needed, and I piled my plate high, carbs be damned. I had a moment's hesitation when I realized there was a meat sauce, but it looked and tasted like beef, so I was okay with it. Whatever it was, it tasted delicious, and I went back for seconds, willing myself not to care what the others thought, if they noticed at all.
You should try the garlic bread, I said to Heather. It's great.
She wrinkled her nose. She looked like one of those women who never ate enough, her head too big for her body, even her spandex shirt loose on her arms. They all did, really, the others. I was the only one who had any extra meat on my bones. Oh, no. Wrong thing to think about.
What was that all about? Samantha asked Athena. Bonding through butchering?
Athena chuckled. Even though she'd spent the day doing exactly what I had, she was polished and put together. Some people were like that. They looked good right after they worked out or woke up. I was never going to be that person, and it was long past when I should have stopped caring about it.
Something like that.
I thought there'd be seminars, Samantha said.
Karma and Michelle aren't big on that sort of thing. They believe that you already have all the knowledge you need within you. You just have to find a way to harness it.
I thought I was going to be getting massages and spa treatments, I said. Silly me.
I could use a spa treatment, Samantha said. Butchering was murder on my nails.
Connie gave a deep belly laugh, and Samantha looked happy that she'd pleased her. I wondered, briefly, if they knew one another outside the group, then dismissed it.
Have you done that before? I asked Athena. That exact thing? No, but things that have taken me out of my comfort zone? 100%.
I thought about what she'd told me on the plane.
Like when you climbed the mountain?
Maroon bells, Athena said, her smile dropping.
That was nuts.
Heather looked at the window where the mountains were framed in the fading sunlight.
You climb that?
Heather said, pointing to the highest peak. An airplane was flying overhead, and from that angle, it seemed like it was flying at the same height.
Maybe it was.
We did.
Heather shook her head.
No way I'm doing that.
It's best not to say what you will and won't do, Connie said gently. That's not what we're about.
Slavish obedience, then?
No, of course not. But a no is usually a roadblock, a hard stop. It's not the way the group works. If we're confronted with a challenge, then we'll discuss it and come to common ground. We'll make a decision together about whether we're going to do it or not.
It occurred to me that we hadn't been consulted about either of the things we'd been asked to do that day. But maybe that came later. I was too worn out to decide. Tired from the day, but also in general. Tired of making decisions and solving problems. Let someone else take the wheel. That was the whole point of a pride, wasn't it? That no one person was responsible for everything? That sounded good to me. That sounded great.
That didn't happen today, Heather said petulantly. I really am a vegetarian.
She pointed at the plate that she'd pushed away, which had plain pasta and some salad on it.
Butchering an animal is against my principles, and really fucking gross.
Nature is death. That's a fact, Athena said. You don't have to eat the deer if you don't want to. At least it was free until it died.
But it didn't have to die.
You're right, it didn't.
So why kill it, then?
Heather was on the point of tears.
To teach us a lesson, Athena said matter-of-factly.
To test us.
Did we pass? I asked, trying to ease the tension.
That wasn't the test, Connie said.
What's the test?
Connie twirled her spaghetti elegantly around her fork.
Every member of PL is put to the test at some point.
How? I pushed, because you cannot change a lifetime of habits in a day.
It's different each time.
But it wasn't what we did today?
No, Athena said. During the retreat, the pride is put through a series of smaller challenges to solidify us as a group. But that's not the test. That's a bigger challenge, something that's life-changing.
Like going to the North Pole? Heather said, half joking, half sarcastic.
You'll know what it is when it happens, Connie said. It will be impossible to miss.
In a good way? I asked nervously.
All challenges achieved are good for us, whether they were hard when we did them or not.
Right, Athena chimed in. Take today. Last night we were sitting at separate tables, but now we've been through something together, something we can use as a foundation to build our pride, so we know that we can trust each other. Things between us are already different. I can feel it. Can you?
Athena was right. These women were strangers yesterday. Now they were in my life in a way I couldn't quite explain.
Yes, I feel it.
That's good. Connie put her fork down. I'm going to head to bed, and I suggest you all do the same. Big day tomorrow.
I wanted to ask her what was coming, but she rose so quickly I didn't have the chance. And ultimately, what did it matter if I knew what it was in advance? A night of worrying about it wasn't going to change anything. Better to sleep and start fresh tomorrow.
I watched Connie leave the dining room as the rest of the group resumed eating and talking of lighter things. I retreated into myself, which I tend to do sometimes. In a group, but not participating, but removed. We were connected, I could feel that, yet I also felt some distance. I listened to their chatter without contributing, and I filed away the fact that Connie hadn't wanted to discuss the test, what it involved or what its purpose was. Not to mention the fact that this was the first time I'd heard anything about it. But it wouldn't be the last.